Hello, West Virginia. It's good to be back in West Virginia. Governor, thank you for the welcome, and my old buddy, please sit down. My old buddy, Nick Rahal. Every time I see the congressman, I look at him, and some of you may have heard me say it when you've been standing next to him. I say, Nick, I can see the dome. And they look at me like, what in God's name is he talking about? When I met Nick, he was working in the Senate cloakroom. And because I commuted every day, 255 miles a day from Wilmington, Delaware to Washington, D.C., because after I got elected, my wife and daughter were killed and my kids were hospitalized. So I started commuting, never intending to say. And so I was always worried about missing votes. And I don't know where you're sitting, Nick, but I'd call Nick when I got, so I didn't miss a vote. And I'd say, Nick, I can see the dome. And finally he said about 6 months later, he said, Senator, God, how far out of town are you looking at that dome? Because he didn't uphold the vote for me for a long time. Nick, you've been my friend for a long, long time, and it's great to be with you, man. And former Senator Goodwin, it's good to see you, man. Jay, I've noticed something. Former senators always look a heck of a lot better than senators. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what the deal is. And Governor Caperton, thank you very much, and your lovely wife for the welcome and the lovely piece of blown glass you gave me from a local West Virginia manufacturer here. And I also, there's so many other people here that I've known for a long time, including, by the way, Mr. Speaker, Tim Miley, I tell you what, that's a real job. They know where you live. and State Auditor Gaynor and Agriculture Commissioner Walt Helmick, it's great to get to meet all of you and so many other distinguished West Virginians. And no more distinguished than JoJo. Joe, thank you for that introduction. Joe and I have become pretty good friends. I like Gail better, but we've become pretty good friends. I've been around for a long time. I've seen an awful lot of senators come and go, and I mean this sincerely. I've seen that the ones who make their mark early all have the same thing in common, and I mean this sincerely. They come with an absolute sense of purpose. They never have any doubt about why they ran or why they wanted the job. And Joe is West Virginia. It's in his bones. It's in his blood. He was he was born in Farmington, and he a great high school quarterback. Joe can take a hit, and Joe can also give a hit. But one of the things Joe understands is if you're going to win a game, you got to have teammates. You got to talk to people. You got to work well with people. And that's why he was such a great governor. And that's why he started off to be such a great senator. He knows that in the tradition of all the great leaders that this state of West Virginia has had, it's important to reach across the aisle to compromise. Compromise isn't a dirty word. You got to get things done. Joe may be a freshman, but Joe's the top of his class in this freshman class. And Joe, it's a pleasure to be your friend and work with you. And folks, it's really it's good to be back in West Virginia. And you say, well, what's he saying? I haven't seen this guy in a while. Well, look, for the first 25 years of my career, I was here a lot more than 25 times. I spent an awful lot of time in this state, and I learned an awful lot. It may sound like an exaggeration, but my formative years as a United States senator and my continued faith in the system that I served in the United States Senate for so long was in no small part molded by West Virginians. And I can think, and one of the few people, I'm one of the few people in public life today, including Jay, that from the age of 29, worked with, learned from, had a deep personal relationship with three of the giants in the United States Senate. Joe said if there was a Hall of Fame, there actually is a Hall of Fame. Everybody who's ever served in the United States Senate who's still living, they know. They know who's in that Hall of Fame. And there are three West Virginians that are in that unwritten, undocumented Hall of Fame. Robert C. Byrd. He not only wrote the history of the Senate, He helped make history in the Senate. And Jennings Randolph. And Jay Rockefeller. I was elected to the United States Senate 7 times. The last time I was elected to the Senate, I was also elected vice president, because in Delaware, once you're on the ticket, you can't get off after August the 15th, for real. We call in Delaware the Torricelli rule. Remember, he was from New Jersey, and he got off at the very end of the campaign. He was losing, and Frank Lautenberg got picked, and everybody said you can't have that, because if you have a guy not doing well, you can't the last minute put some new guy in. So in Delaware, if you're on the ticket after August 15th, you cannot get off. If you get off, the seat is vacant. The chairman, unless it's illness, the chairman cannot appoint someone. So I had to run as senator and vice president. And so I got sworn in for the 7th time because we needed the votes early on in that before January 20th, between January 3rd and the 20th. Jay may remember. And the Senate historian came in as I was leaving, and I know everybody thinks it's an easy choice, but I didn't. I loved the Senate. I did not want to leave the Senate. And he said, well, as Senator Biden leaves, there's a thing called a history minute that the historian comes in and does. And he said, we want Joe Biden to know, you all should know that Senator Biden have served longer in the United States Senate than all but 13 people in the history of America. That was supposed to make me feel good. It just made me feel very old, very old. But the reason I bother to say that is that I've known an awful lot of senators. I've served longer than anybody but Bob Byrd and a few others. And I don't think there is another state in the Union whose leadership in the last half century has left a more indelible mark on public policy and the United States Senate than the state of West Virginia. That's a fact. As my uncle would say, that's a natural fact. As different as their backgrounds and personalities, these three great men had a common thread that runs through all of them, and I've got to witness it up close and personal. They're all extremely bright, patriotic men who have an incredible sense of decency and a concern, most of all, for the struggles of ordinary people. That was a driving force of their devotion to their job. As I was the second youngest senator ever elected popularly in American history, the other, I might add, was a West Virginian, a guy named Rush D. Holt, who served 1 time and ceased. His career ended when he made a speech against John L. Lewis. Kind of coincidental, but that's literally what happened. He didn't get elected a second term. But I just want you to know, as we used to say in the Senate, a point of personal privilege. Robert C. Byrd played a significant role in getting me elected in 1972. I was a 29-year-old kid, even though everyone said I didn't have a chance. Nixon was at the top of the ticket. McGovern only got 28% of the vote in my state, if I remember. My opponent had an 82% favorable rating. Nonetheless, Bob Byrd early on reached out to me. He raised money for me. He helped me organize. He came to Delaware and he campaigned. He made my case. He gave me instant legitimacy, and it worked. And he never walked away from me. When my wife and daughter were killed shortly after I was elected, I was elected on November the 7th, December 18th. My family was broadsided by a tractor trailer. My wife and daughter were killed, and my 2 sons very badly injured. Bob Byrd showed up. Bob Byrd was there without ever telling me. There was a memorial service for my wife. Nick will remember this. Memorial service for my wife. This big Catholic church was packed. It pouring rain on a cold December night. Bob Byrd stood out in the rain. He drove up, stood in the rain for the entire service outside because they offered him to come in. They said, please, Mr. Leader, come in. He said, no, I don't want to take anybody else's place, even though he was offered a place. I never heard about it until after it was all over. and never heard it once from Bob Byrd. But you know what? He was my image of West Virginia, a neighbor, selfless, seeking no recognition, there for a kid who needed a whole hell of a lot of help, and I did. And he was there. When I finally arrived in the Senate, you see, I wasn't sworn in with the rest of my class because my two sons were was touch and go. They were still hospitalized. And he and a wonderful man, Mike Mansfield, got together and conspired to make sure I'd come down and get sworn in. But I just couldn't bring myself to leave the hospital, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to do it. So Bob Byrd made sure that the Secretary of the Senate came up to the hospital. I'm not sure, but I think I'm maybe the only senator not in the middle of a war. The Civil War was sworn in a hospital at bedside. Bob Byrd did that. Bob Byrd wasn't only for me there then. He stuck with me the rest of my career. And when I finally arrived in the Senate, he saw to it that I'd be taken care of by another powerful West Virginian, Jennings Randolph, the Public Works Committee. He not only chaired that committee, as Nick Rayo will tell you, he owned it. He owned it. And I was one of his boys. I learned a lot from Jennings Randolph, although I never called him Jennings. He was always Mr. Chairman. He taught me that you're there to serve and produce for your people. And my Lord, did he produce for West Virginia. Half of Delaware's in West Virginia. How in God's name he could talk me into getting Delaware Highway money into West Virginia, I still haven't figured out. You know, Jennings was elected to the United States Senate in 1932 with Franklin Roosevelt. He got defeated in the recession in the Korean War. But he shared one unyielding trait with Franklin Roosevelt, as did Bob Byrd, as did Jay Rockefeller, an inordinate faith in ordinary people. If you gave them a chance, if you leveled the playing field, there wasn't anything they couldn't do, and they would do extraordinary things. As with Bob Byrd, I got to travel the state from the Northern Panhandle to Mercer County with Jennings Randolph. One of my most vivid memories was Jennings Randolph was running for the last time. And people were saying, well, maybe he's too old to run. So he came to me, and those of you who knew him know he'd talk like this, Joe. He'd say, now, Joe, I'm up for re-election, and they're saying I may be a little old. I'd like you to come back to West Virginia with me, and you tell him how hard it is to keep up with Jennings. Seriously, I'm not joking. I was 35 years old. So he said, now, we're going to go up. We're going to go see Harley Staggers. We're going up to Morgantown. We're going to drive up, and I'll pick you up in the corner between the old and new office Senate building. And I said, okay, I expected Nick or some staffer to be coming up to pick me up. Jennings had the ugliest brown Dodge I ever saw in my life. Up to the corner comes Jennings, driving, beeps the horn, I get in. I said, where are we going? He said, we're going to West Virginia. We drove. We drove to Morgantown. And I have, as a practicing Catholic, I was doing this half the way, you know, with Jennings. I said, can I drive, Mr. Chairman? We get to Morgantown, and I'm the speaker at the dinner, and which was planned. And I got up and did my thing about how I can't keep up with Jennings. And I taught, it was true, he had incredible energy. And the dinner was over, and speaking of energy, he said, now, Joe, we're going over to the high school. I'm thinking, what in the heck are we going to the high school for? The Miss West Virginia pageant was at the high school. It's a big high school, if I remember correctly. One of those WPA deals back in the 30s. My recollection is it's a big high school. We walk in back in the back of the stage, and I'm thinking, the one thing I know, my generation, the last thing you do is show up at a beauty contest. And the very, 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 very last thing you do is you show up at the contest as they're about to announce the winner. So we're standing in the back, and this woman in her, as straight as a ramrod, looked at us and said, oh, Jennings, good to see you, Jennings. He said, they're just about to announce the queen. And they had the three, you know, the runner-up, the first runner-up, and they're on the stage, and the MC standing there with a mic. She said, but hold up a minute, hold up a minute. She walks out and walks up to the MC and says, whispers, and he said, oh, we have Jennings Randolph here. And I thought, my God, he's dead. He walks out, Jay, he grabs the microphone, and he does one of his Jennings Randolph speeches I heard. May my fellow West Virginians, may the soft rains of heaven fall upon your fields, and may every... And everybody's, you know, mesmerized, including the three queens. And I'm praying, please, God, don't let him introduce me. Please, God, don't let him introduce me. And Jesse said, and I have with me a fine young fella from Delaware. And I'm going, oh, my God. I swear, this is God's truth. And I'm going, oh, no. And just then, the woman who was walked out on the stage, who was running the pageant, turned to me and said, can't that Jennings speak the English? And I looked at her and said, but I can't. So anyway, I've got a lot of good memories in West Virginia. And then along came Jay. Then along came Jay. I'd already been in the Senate a long time when Governor Rockefeller ran for the United States Senate. But I can remember when he ran for governor, because I remember what they said about him. This is this psychon of a wealthy family. He's just forum shopping. He's just down here. He's just trying to find a safe Democratic seat. And this is all he's doing. He doesn't give a darn. He's an opportunist. Remember the phrase, he has nothing in common with us. He has nothing in common with us. They didn't know you, Jay. As Joe pointed out, they forgot what brought you to West Virginia in the first place, why you came in the first place. It was to help. Always to help. It was to help the people of Appalachia back then in the program, the Johnson's program in Vista. You came to give, but you found out the people of West Virginia, they stole. They stole your heart. They stole your heart. The amazing thing is, although you and Bob Byrd and Jennings Randolph are different personalities, come from significantly different backgrounds, you all had one motivating principle in common. Give everybody an even shot. Give everybody an even shot. My dad, when coal sort of petered out and Scranton, after the war and things kind of shut down, my dad had to move away for a year to find a job down in Wilmington, Delaware, with his brother. And I remember ever since that time, when we moved down, anybody lose a job, my dad said, understand one thing, Joey. A job's about a lot more than a paycheck. A job's about your dignity. A job's about respect. A job's about your place in the community. It's about who you are. It's about whether you can lift your head up. A job's about your dignity. Jay, who didn't have to do a single thing in his life like he's done, he understood that in his bones. Presumptuous of me to say this, Jay, but I've worked with you for a long time. My observation is that's what drove you. Injustice, unfairness, the abuse of power. Seeing people who lack the economic resources being used. And it always, always, always enraged you when I work with you. You're overwhelming proof, Jay, that it's not about the circumstances you come from. It's about your soul. And Jay Rockefeller, you got soul. You've got soul. And because Jay Rockefeller did come to West Virginia, as Joe pointed out, millions of kids got health care they weren't getting before. Because he came, he picked up where Jennings and Bob Byrd picked up. For those who suffer a black lung disease, he couldn't cure them, but he could make sure they got compensated and received compassionate care. And those companies in West Virginia that treated people fairly, had decent jobs he could raise a middle-class family on. Jay fought for and brought more in. Because it's about the people you employ that moves Jay. Jay's influence has been profound. You know, sometimes in your own state, you are not recognized for just how profound an influence you have beyond your state. Granted, for Jay, it's always been about the people of West Virginia, but it's been Jay's standing, Jay's influence, Jay's power that has been able to reach out like few other senators have to help their states, to bring things to his state. When it gets down to it, the kind of conversations you and I have, Jay, over the years is about that single mom trying to raise two kids. And how can she do it, Joe? How can she do it? It's about that dad trying to figure out how he cares for his autistic child. You say, how can you do it? It's about that struggling couple trying to make sure their mom doesn't have to be put in a home, that they can afford to bring mom home with them. It's about those thousands of West Virginians and people all across America through no fault of their own in this great recession lost their homes without ever having missed a mortgage payment. He's a pretty remarkable guy. Because I sit next to Jay, I sat with him, I've been with him, and it's amazing. I measure a man or a woman, how they talk to me in private. They're not out on the stage, and they're not on the Senate floor. The things that stir their soul, anger them, the passions they have. I'm not being a wise guy, Jay, when I say the passion you have for people in need, you could have been a coal miner's son. You could have been somebody born on the other side. You could have been the guy raised without a father. And it's remarkable to me. It's remarkable to me, with all that you have, how much you've given. But although Jay's heart and soul are local, his intellect is global. There's a lot of things I could tell you about, but I want to tell you about one. I have, for years, I was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. I was on the Intelligence Committee. I've been vice president. I'm supposedly, quote, an expert in foreign policy. Where I come from, Nick, an expert's anyone from out of town with a briefcase. I don't have a briefcase. I may not be right, but I know an awful lot about the subject. As a former chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and a member, Jay has been one of the most important, consistent, intelligent, and capable voices improving our intelligence, our nation's intelligence capabilities. In fact, I know because of just me, the president, and only three other people, not the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, no one but four of us, early on in August, before the attack was the following year. For almost 7 months, 6 months, no one knew but five of us. And Jay, what we knew was our ability to be able to detect Abbottabad and where he was in no small part because what you started to put in place 6 years earlier as chairman of the committee. No one's ever going to know the real story of how big a part you played and not being a part of, not assessing intelligence, but making sure this nation had the capacity to protect itself. No one has been more clear-eyed. No one has been more, has let out more of a clarion call over the last 6 to 8 years about the threat of the cyber threats we face and how we have to combat it than Jay Rockefeller. There's no doubt in my mind, and I'm sure none of you know any of this, because Jay can't come home and talk about this stuff. He's not allowed to talk about it. I can only talk about it in generic terms with you. But I promise you, you and America are a much safer nation because of Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia. Jay, you've been an inspiration to the president and to me. Your focus is our focus, but you've lead on it. Education, health care, caring for our veterans, 300,000 coming home with unseen injuries, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, over 51,000 mortally wounded, over 6,000 dead. I don't know what it is in you, Jay. I don't know what produced the kind of intensity you feel. But you've invested in all the things that are necessary for an economy to grow, but more importantly, for middle class to be rebuilt. We not only share your outlook, we share the same values. Jay understands, as I said, my dad always talked about. He'd say, everybody, Joey, no matter who they are, is entitled to be treated with dignity. That's a big deal. It's a big deal in the neighborhood I come from. It's a big deal in the family I grew up in. It's a big deal in families of those people who feel like they've been totally forgotten. This is a man of extraordinary character, a generous and decent man of enormous integrity and impeccable incredible political courage, matched only by his intellect. Jay and I have one thing in common. I don't have those in common, but one thing we do have in common. We married way up, both of us. Like Jay, I married a wife who has 3 more degrees than I have, for real. I married a woman who has more backbone than almost anybody I know. I've noticed that same trait in Sharon. He married a woman who's the CEO of a television station, chairman of the board of a national gallery, and the board of Pepsi Cola, Museum of Modern Art, a woman of unmatched political instincts. And she came by it naturally. Her dad was one of my great friends and mentors. He's on the other side of the aisle, but a man of incredible integrity, Chuck Percy of Illinois. She understood. I got a feeling occasionally she gave Jay a few quiet lessons about that institution called the United States Senate. And she shares the same devotion to the people of West Virginia. One of the highest compliments, as Joe can tell you, in any era in the United States Senate, one of the highest compliments a senator can be paid is the following to be said. There's not a single man or woman in the Senate who does not trust or respect Jay Rockefeller. Not one. Not one. And it's not because he's been a shrinking violet in terms of what he believes. It's because of his integrity and his character. Until we return where the majority of people with the ethic of Jay Rockefeller, we're not ever going to be able to solve the difficult problems facing this country, because no one party can do this. But I'm optimistic, because there's something in the soil here. There's something in these beautiful mountains as you fly over them. There's something in the air that keeps you producing women and men of extraordinary capability. And that's not hyperbole. A lot of us are counting on West Virginia. The whole country's counting on you. It can be said of Jay Rockefeller what I said of Bob Byrd when I had the great honor of speaking at his funeral on the steps of the Capitol. West Virginia is written on his heart. He wears it on his sleeve. He takes such pride in this place. He takes such pride in all of you. When you finish a Democratic dinner with Bob Byrd, and I think I've done at least 8 or 10 over the years, he used to get out his fiddle. Some of you remember. And he'd sing John Denver's song, Almost Heaven, West Virginia. Who am I to argue with Jay Rockefeller or Bob Byrd? Jay, I'm going to personally miss you. I'm going to miss you terribly because I trust you completely. But, old buddy, we still have a year of work to do, man. And there's no one I'd rather do it with than Jay Rockefeller. God bless you, Jay, Sharon, your whole family. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Go, West Virginia. Give me another Rockefeller. Thank you. Thank you, pal. Thank you, folks.